Welcome to this week's Rider Support.
Today we're going to talk about what wind speed is too much wind speed for you to go out training. How do you grade those cobble sections in Paris-Roubaix? Make sure you stick around to the end where we're going to give you our recommendation for a bike in the 5,000 to 7,000 range. But first, let's talk motor doping. Sarah.
Hello. It's good to be back. My favorite time of the week.
What's first on the menu? We're going to go straight into motor doping?
Yeah, let's pop straight into it. So this question came in from a listener and he said, Anthony, I think your interview with Greg Lamont where he sparked the question of motor doping was listened to by the UCI because they have just appointed a new guy to investigate this across cycling. I'm really shocked that this is such an issue in the pro peloton and kind of thought that Greg was being a bit crazy and tinfoil hat about the whole thing. Do you really think it's as rampant as Greg made out?
There's thousands of comments. You know what, actually, we should watch that clip again because I haven't, it's about 6 or 7 months since that first Greg Lamont interview and I actually can't even remember that well what he said.
He said a lot, let's have a little look.
I sometimes don't believe it. And I truly believe motors were used to, you went a lot of big races until very recently. It was a real deal. And I look at it now, they're doing 65 bikes a deal. You don't see bike changes like you did 5 years ago. How could it be that either the equipment was so bad, Shimano was making really bad equipment, but I would see five, when I was doing Eurosport, I would see five bike changes by riders. And it pissed me off. I would see, it, and I know what, I've ridden the motor. I've seen what's happened with it. And I know Insight, I know who I believe was using it. I'm not going to say that out loud because
the motor. The crazy one. It was a crazy clip.
Oh my God. It still gives me butterflies looking back at that interview with Greg because he was so honest, so open to the stuff he was coming out with. It still completely bamboozles me. And I always talk about the first time I watched it, the raw edit, and his wife was literally coming, Kathy was literally coming in every couple of minutes going, Greg, I don't think you can say that.
He just didn't care.
He didn't care at all. So do you think that Greg was kind of, overblowing the situation? This is something that we talk about and we see a lot of comments under our YouTube about is motor doping. It seems to have become a very, very hot topic in the last couple of
motors are definitely being used. It's like, is cheating going on in sport? 100% cheating is going on in sport. The question is how much? It's a number that's greater than zero. I've no doubt at all about that. If you just think about the incentives, like you can win so much money. You look at how, I'm not saying Vanderpoel is doping, but you look at how famous Vanderpoel is. You're looking at how much cash he's making, salary, endorsements, 10-year bike deal with Canyon. Like that's the incentive to get to the top of this game. So where there's that much prize money and that much accolades for being at the top of the game, you're always going to have people who will try and shortcut that, who don't have the talent to get there naturally, like Vanderpoel. So they figure out a way to get there. So I'm absolutely convinced that motor doping is going on. And I actually would go a little bit further than Lamont. He goes on in that clip and I think he talks about, we don't see as many bike changes now. I think we see more bike changes now because people stopped getting wheels changed with true axles.
Yeah.
So now with true axles, everyone's using disc brakes. There's no one in the peloton not using disc brakes at a professional level. It takes a long time to change a wheel. So a lot of people are just changing a bike.
Yeah, ditching the bike and getting a new one.
Yeah.
And so do you think that this is warranted then, the UCI appointing this new guy? This new guy is legit. He basically has been, he's a former criminal investigator and he has previously worked in like loads of positions. They sound pretty cool. Fighting against sports corruption, match fixing and other ethical issues. It sounds sounds like this guy is like a serious, serious hitter. So do you think that the UCI are gone a bit too far appointing this guy for the role? I mean, they obviously think it's warranted.
No, I don't think so. If you look at how serious they take doping with the World Anti-Doping Code, with WADA there to administer the World Anti-Doping Code, mechanical doping needs that same level. Like it's 2016 when we seen the Belgian cyclocross rider, Femke Van Driese, I think I pronounced that right. She was caught for mechanical doping in the World Cyclocross Championships. As far as I know, that's the first confirmed case of mechanical doping. But very little has happened between 2016 and 2024 in terms of enforcement, but plenty's happened in terms of technology.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that, like blood doping, EPO, all of that, the if you're, you know, if there's a lot of money on the line, people are so smart, they're so cute, they're always going to think up of ways to kind of get around it. The rule that I looked up, which I thought was really interesting, is this kind of bylaw about how a bike should be propelled. I thought it was really interesting. It says, the bike shall be propelled solely through a chain set by the legs, and then it says inferior muscular chain, moving in a circular movement without electric or other assistance. So I kind of geeked out on the actual rules there. I just thought that was really interesting that they actually had to write that in the rules of what legal cycling is for the UCI races.
You think they would update that? It's like the American Constitution or something. It's like, come on guys, we wrote that with a feather. Did you not update that? Ye old turn the legs around.
Ye old bicycle.
No, it's definitely going on. But look, let's go on. I know we've had a load of questions to get through today.
Okay, next question. Anthony, I know rule number 9 of the Voluminati is if you're out training in bad weather, you are a badass, which is fair given that any sign of rain, a lot of people in my group opt for indoor cycling. I don't really mind the rain, but what wind speed conditions would you never go out training in? And if I do go out and the wind picks up, do you have any tips for riding solo and in a group in strong winds?
I hate those Voluminati rules.
Do you hate them?
I think they're stupid.
I think
like,
they're funny.
Cycling should be inclusive, and I think they make it an us and them. You know the rules or you don't.
I think everyone should look at them completely tongue in cheek.
They should rip them up.
No, I think they should look at them tongue in cheek and just think that they're a little bit of comedy in a sport that can take itself quite seriously with sock lengths, the price of bikes. I think you just need to look at Voluminati as kind of like a sketch. A little bit of a funny sketch.
But I think you're right. No one goes riding in the rain anymore. You were at a Castelli event recently in Girona, and one of the guys, I'm not sure if it was the founder or one of the engineers of clothing, said they've less emphasis on making the kit waterproof now because no one really rides in the rain anymore.
Yeah, they're releasing these kind of new lines, and yeah, it's more about temperature control rather than keeping the wind out or the rain out, which is really interesting. They've done studies globally about people going out riding in the rain, and it's absolutely on the downtrend.
But it's because, like, you know, the setup we have here, jumping on the Watt bike, it's so frictionless. You jump on and it's just, it's so easy to watch a Netflix movie or a YouTube or whatever, and time goes so fast. Contrast that to 10, 15 years ago, the indoor trainers were hardship. You'd almost make the calculation and go, I'd prefer to go out in the rain rather than have this horrible riding experience. Yeah. But wind is a different beast. I was looking up and I can't find, maybe someone in the comments below will correct me, but I can't find a speed that the UCI will, wind speed that the UCI will deem too dangerous to race in. And my kind of rationale for that was that it's actually not that helpful to have a specific wind speed because you need to know what direction the course is going. You need to know the elevation. Is there openings like gates or fields? Because that's where it blusts. And also wind blowing and gusting are two different things. If it's gusting at over 50 kilometers an hour, that's kind of my tipping point where I really consider whether I should ride or not. We called off the group ride 2 weeks ago, and that's because it was gusting at 50 kilometers an hour. And that's a speed where I start to consider my route. I don't want to be riding in a group. I don't want to be riding at elevation. I don't want to be riding past big prairies or open fields, stuff like that. And I definitely don't want to be riding on the coast, which is a challenge for us because we live on the coast.
Yeah, we can't avoid it. Wind is really, I mean, look, I'm still learning so much about cycling, but wind for me is kind of like my arch nemesis. The rain is not even a big thing for me anymore, but wind, I very, very much struggle in, and it's kind of crosswinds, positioning yourself in a group so you're being sheltered. Of course, everyone is fighting for that sheltered position in a group if you're with a lot of riders who know what they're doing. So I really, really struggle in the wind. It kind of, I have to say, it's one of the least favourable conditions. I hate headwinds. I find tailwinds really, really hard to stick on the wheel in front of me. And crosswinds, I have absolutely no clue what I'm doing in them.
You weren't watching cycling back in 2015. You're a bit of a Johnny come lately to the sport. So Geraint Thomas in 2015, you probably only know him for riding Grand Tours, but he's actually a great classics rider as well. 2015, I think he just won E3 Harelbeker earlier that week, and he was riding, someone's going to correct me as I get it wrong, but I'm pretty sure it was Gent Wevelgem, and it was gusting at 70, 80 kilometers an hour, and he actually got blown clean off the road and into the ditch.
Yeah.
Like the wind picked him up and boom, gone.
Yeah. Yeah. So any tips for kind of staying a little bit safe? Let's say you go out, you're like, this is actually fair enough, but you go out and it picks up as your ride goes on. You still have to get home. Your missus won't come and collect you. So what do you do? My advice is hold on. Like when you're eating, when you're going past gates, like really hold on to your bike. And I find, I don't know, Anthony, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, keep pedaling. Don't freewheel, because I feel like you've got more control of the bike when you're actually pedaling in the wind. If you're getting crosswind, if you're getting crosswinds coming over you, trying to push you over, you've got that control if you're pedaling. I don't know about dropping cadence or anything like that, but what's your advice?
I think, like you're saying, this is only if you're caught out and I wouldn't go out in that wind. I think that's where the safety assessment starts, just looking ahead at the forecast and if it's going to be blown that much later in the day, even just don't go out right indoors. But if you are caught out in it, we seen a couple last week and it was super windy on the coast, like too windy to ride. And I'd say it was over 60 kilometers an hour. And both of them had on the really cheap inflatable air jackets. They're almost like someone paragliding off a cliff, like they totally inflated. That's not making your bike any easier to handle either. So I would watch what you're wearing, hold on to the bars, try and plan a route home that's inland.
Yeah, sheltered. I agree. And then, as you said, really do start to get into the habit of checking the wind. Yeah, Windy is a great app. Yeah, really check the weather before you set out. It can make or break a ride for you. Okay, next question. Hey, Anthony. Wow, Paris-Roubaix was amazing this year. I watched every minute. But can you explain the different types of cobbles and the grading system used? I'm also thinking of doing this Sportif next year. So this would be good to have this information in my back pocket.
Before you sign up for that Sportif, I would have a look at the pictures of the rider's hands.
Yeah.
I think Cycling News put it up. If Wes can find it, they might appear just here on my finger. Who knows?
Magic.
But everyone, I think, apart from Vanderpoel, magically, their hands were cut to pieces. Pitcock's hands, like all the skin missing, and the common wisdom, you hear people saying, oh, you're not wearing mitts, because I don't wear mitts that often on gravel. But when the surface is that uneven, mitts actually just create another layer of friction.
Yeah.
So Vanderpoel didn't wear any mitts and he had no problems. Some people wore them, some people didn't. Anyway, that's not the question, but I would have a look at that before signing up for Roubaix. The cobble sectors are graded from one star being the easiest. That's like the final sector before you go into the velodrome.
It's almost just clinkers. Like pave. Yeah, pave on your way in. It's nice and smooth. A little bit of rumbling.
It's like a garden patio type surface. So that's a one star. And then all the way up to Carrefour de Labre, Forest of Arenborg, they're five star sections. So the difficulty of the sector is one consideration. That's how rough the cobbles are, how jagged they are. That's
how
one
deep,
sector.
Deep, the kind of, you know, where the kind of grout, I guess, would be in between like tiles. That's missing. There's nothing there. There's so many opportunities for your wheel just to slip in there.
So there's the difficulty, there's the length of the sector, because you could have a super hard sector, but if it's only a couple of hundred meters long, it's not going to be a five star. And it's also its position relative to the finish of the race, how much it's the decisive in the race. Does the, you know, Arenborg Trench, the brake has gone there so many times. Carrefour de Labre, the brake's gone there so many times. These are five star sections. So that's how it works. One star being the easiest, five star being the hardest. Boom.
Yeah. And so what did you, I mean, we had a listener write in a couple of months ago saying that she was going to actually, or should she tackle the Paris-Roubaix Sportif? You said no. I said, go for
it. Did she do it?
I was like, go girl. I'm actually going to reach out to her and see, did she do it? And I'll follow
up with
that.
If you're watching, let us know in the comments.
Yeah, exactly.
Or
let
if
us
anyone
know.
Else done it.
Or if anybody else did it, because I said to that listener, go for it. Go complete it. You'll have a great time. Honestly, when I was watching Paris-Roubaix a few weeks ago, I was like, this is actually madness. It just looks like hell.
Hey, Roadmen. Today's episode is brought to you by our amazing clothing sponsor, Lacall. I bounced around cycling clothing brands for the better part of a decade until I found Lacall. And then I settled. The moment I put that kit on, I knew I was stuck. Founded by former Team GB cyclist Yanto Barker, Lacoste isn't just another cycling brand. It's an apparel brand born out of professional cycling's heart and soul. I had Yanto on the podcast and his mission, it shone bright in that conversation for me. He wants to create the ultimate cycling gear, and he's doing this by combining pro-level insights with the kind of technical details that make all the difference. So whether you're racing, you're training, or you're just enjoying the ride, it's an amazing piece of kit. Every piece of Lacoste kit, it's tested to the limit, ensuring it stands up to the toughest rides. What really sets Lacoste apart for me is how they've taken the feedback from the World Tour teams they've sponsored, working with top aerodynamicists, and they've incorporated that into all their kit. So whether you're pushing to beat your own personal best or you're just out enjoying the open road, Lacoste's mission is help you get the most out of every single ride. Trust me, feeling good on the bike means performing well. And with Lacoste, you're always in good hands. We've teamed up with Lacoste to give you an amazing discount. If you head on over to lacoste.cc and use the code ROADMAN20 at checkout, you're going to get 20% off your Lacoste order.
Okay, next question. Anthony and Sarah, I'm an absolute newbie. A friend sent me your podcast. I've been using my dad's old race bike from the early 80s and I'm going to buy myself a road bike this payday. I've been going out with a local group and everybody has an opinion on what I should get. I have a budget of about $6,500 or $7,000. What are the three things that I should focus on? I've no preference for a particular brand or anything like that, and I'll be mostly using it for outdoor training, group rides, and maybe potentially racing in a year or two.
I was just looking up to see how much the Decathlon race bike costs. A full spec Decathlon race bike that I can find with SRAM ETAP is looking at 8,500, which is a lot cheaper than your top of the line Specialized Factors Trex, but that's still a little bit outside his budget. I honestly think there's a huge tailwind in the industry of secondhand used bikes at the moment. A lot of people are like the idea of being a cyclist. Do you remember I had Jerry Redmond on the podcast and he had a great expression, everyone wants to be a gangster till it's time to be a gangster. I think people are like that with cycling. Everyone wants to be a cyclist until it's time to be a cyclist. They buy their bike, have grand aspirations about kicking off their fitness, recapturing their health. And it doesn't always pan out for various reasons. And the secondhand market is flooded with amazing bikes. And they're like, we were looking at another dog the other day. It's like, these bikes need a home. They're beautiful bikes that are going unused. So for $5,000 to $6,500 or $6,500 to $7,000, you're going to get an absolutely phenomenal secondhand bike. A secondhand bike that is a top of the line bike with very little wear and tear. Stuff I'd be looking for at that price range. If you were going secondhand, there's almost no limit on what you're going to get. It's going to be the very top spec race bike. You're going to be getting SRAM Red ETAP or Jura Ace from Shimano or a Campike Super Record at that price. You're going to get a brilliant aero frame from one of the top brands. I really think secondhand is the way to go on this. More and more people are going to start doing it, I think.
I agree. So this guy is absolutely newbie. So you're kind of doing, you're talking about SRAM ETAP, blah, blah, blah. So three things that you would go for: disc brakes, electric gearing, and a nice aero frame. Is that basically
what you're
saying?
Have to choose at that price point, because if he's going secondhand at that price point, you have to make some compromises at that price point if you're going new. So maybe we'll give him the options for if he's going new, but there's no compromises, I don't think, at secondhand at that price point, because you're literally getting the very, very best bike money can buy. Like the Decathlon bike we looked at there, that's the same bike the guys are racing in the World Tour at the moment. And that's only 8,500 brand new. So that's going to be, you know, when it hits the secondhand market, probably less than five. But your Specialized SL8s and these type of things that are 14 new, when they hit the secondhand market, they're probably seven, I would say, 6,500 to 7,000. So there's no compromises needed. You get the absolute Ferrari if you go secondhand. If you're going new, I would look to prioritize getting a good frame and good group set. And you can always upgrade wheels if you want at a later point. So I would look to get a nice frame. I'm not big into the aero climbing distinction. I think at 6,500, 7,000, $1,000, you're going to get a pretty nice frame regardless of what brand you go with. I'd be less inclined to go for one of the big brands because I think you end up paying a lot of R&D and marketing costs when you can get sort of a second tier frame, but they're not second tier really, like something like Time or something like that. It's a beautiful frame, but less of the hype around it because they're not sponsoring a world tour team. Like the Factor founder was on a podcast recently and he said €500 from every bike sale goes directly to sponsoring the Israel Premier Tech. Like you just don't need that. You don't need to be funding their marketing campaign. So you can go with someone like Time, which is going to be an amazing frame. And then you can spec it out with probably Shimano Ultegra, a nice set of wheels. Done.
Yeah, sounds lovely. I think chapeau to this guy for riding around in his dad's early 80s bike, looking like a proper absolute dude, I'd say, on that for the first couple of months until he knew that he completely fell in love with the sport and is now going to treat himself to a new bike.
Or do you know, like my all-time favorite frame, which I will get at some point, it's that Mariposa frame that Michael Barry makes, the ex-Team Sky rider. He makes them over in Toronto. It's like my dream frame at some point. If you're getting me a birthday present, Sarah, it's my favorite ever bike. It's handmade, it's steel, but it's one of those ones you buy it once and you have it for the rest of your life. It's not chasing trends of aero climbing. It's just, it's forever cool.
Yeah. Absolutely beautiful bikes. Okay, next question. Sarah, I have been catching up on your podcast over the last few months and really enjoyed the one you did on your own about houseplants and the benefits of having them in your home. My new houseplant addiction has become almost as expensive as my bike addiction, but can you and Anthony give me other tips for making my home optimized for recovery and performance? Yeah, I'll link that in the show notes. That's going back a little bit now. I did a full podcast on basically how much health benefits having plants in your home will actually give you. And you can go back and listen to that. There's loads of things that you can do to kind of drill down and optimize your home, isn't there? I mean, we have air purifiers. We have dogs now, so the air purifiers definitely come in handy. We're quite careful about cleaning products that we use, so we try and buy eco-friendly cleaning products. We've ditched all our non-stick pans. Apparently, they're highly toxic when you're cooking with them and they're exposed to heat. What do you think, Anthony?
Hey, Roadman, excuse the short interruption. I love riding the bike, but on account of being so busy with the podcast at the moment, I'm now what's called a time-crunched rider. I never thought I'd see the day. But I have a tool. I'm using Wattbike to keep myself sharp and on point with specific sessions to maximize that available training time. I have a Wattbike Atom right here in the recording studio beside me. And when I have an hour in between interviews, I jump on. It's removing all the friction points for me. There's no more 10-minute setup, unfolding legs, banging my knees off stuff, getting my hands dirty, the usual connection issues. It just works every single time. The Atom's perfect for virtual racing as well because it has crisp gear changes, it has 1% accuracy, and it has max gradient capability of up to 25%. If you're looking for an indoor trainer, I honestly couldn't recommend this any higher. I've been using a Wattbike since 2013. Honestly, it's the last indoor trainer that you're ever going to need. If you head on over to wattbike.com now and use code ROADMAN10, that's ROADMENTEN, and that's going to get you 10% off your Wattbike. I had Ken Cook on the podcast. Ken Cook is the founder of the Environmental Working Group, which talks about and advocates for toxin-free living across the US mainly. But it's a good website to jump onto and it opens your eyes as to the amount of toxin exposure we have in our lives. Like, did you ever look at your toothpaste ingredients? Like, we put that into our mouth every single day, twice a day, you know, almost every day for some of us. And we've no idea what's in it. With the amount of water we drink as well, does it need that much fluoride in it? You know, you need fluoride, but you don't need to swallow fluoride, definitely liters of it a day. So Ken Cook talks about all this stuff because everything from the makeup you're using, the sun cream you're using, the water you're showering in, there's all a toxic component to this. And the biggest one that he says we should be doing, if you can afford it, is moving to organic food because of the amount of chemicals. And he talks about just the amount of chemicals that are on food. And it's a really interesting conversation. It gets a little bit nerdy in points, but I was at pains in this conversation to try and make it actionable for people because you know, we talked about the plastics in your mattress, in your couch. You don't listen to a podcast and have to go out and buy a new sofa and a new mattress straight away. But the actionable part of it is, next time you're buying something, just think about the plastic content in it. I know you've started doing it this year with your clothes.
Yeah. So I've talked about it on the podcast before. I'm trying to shop for clothes more ethically, because in the past I've kind of gotten into this fast fashion cycle. I'm buying crap clothes that go in the bin.
It's a fascist fashion. Just got around dressed as Hitler for the day.
That could get a few raised eyebrows. So yeah, I'm trying to only wear natural fibres, absolute cotton. And that's like a conundrum as well, because of all of the, you know, kind of plastics and technical fibres that we need in our sports clothes. And there's a whole conversation to be had around that and how we recycle those particular clothes. What I will say about toxins in your home, just to bring it full circle back to the plants, I do talk in the podcast at length, and I name about four or five particular types of houseplants that will absorb these toxins for you in your home that we're kind of constantly being exposed to. So yeah, definitely go and check that out. And as I said, there's a few other things that you can do to make your optimize your home for very little money. MyWoosh is hands down the best virtual cycling app for home, and it's redefining indoor training at no cost. Yep, it's absolutely free. And setting up MyWoosh is really easy. Just download the MyWoosh app, connect your device like your watt bike or your smart trainer, and off you go. Now, if you're feeling competitive, there's weekly races for every category from beginner to pro. Plus, there's insane prize money up for grabs. Now, if you've no plan to race, that's no problem. There's hundreds of free training plans and workouts that are designed to really push you to your limits. You can enjoy daily group rides and group workouts, and you can customize your avatar, all without opening your wallet. So go on over to the MyWoosh app and have a look around. Why spend money on monthly subscriptions elsewhere when MyWoosh offers all of this for free? So join MyWoosh today. It's available on iOS, macOS, Google Play, Apple TV, or click on the link in the show notes to get started.
Folks, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Rider Support. Rider Support, it's your hub. It's where we answer all the community questions, anything you don't understand about cycling, or any way we can help you on your journey to become a more rounded cyclist. Thank you for supporting the show. You can check out the sponsors in the link down below. That helps us keep creating this amazing content. There's another video up here, which I think you're really going to enjoy. And don't forget to subscribe to the channel so you don't miss the next one.